Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are on episode 8 of the Derg Poi podcast. My name is Rugged, or Rugged the Dragon, whatever you want to call me. I'm here to talk about the next topic, which is about my military career, or my military life, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, it's a long story. So, before we get into the main topic, if you have any questions regarding anything you want to ask me on the Derg Poi podcast, if you want me to answer some mail and all that stuff, go on my Twitter and you can DM me. Or you can go on my Discord server and you can ask me via PMs if you want to. So anytime you want to ask me something and we end an episode, we'll go into our mail and we'll get some questions and we'll answer them. You can ask me almost anything as long as it's safe for work. So in the meantime, let's get on with the main topic, which is about my military career. So let's start with how it all began. So, I mean, I think the first instance of actually becoming interested in the military in general didn't really start with, like, military-based movies or whatever. It was really just about playing certain video games or watching movies, right? You know, when I was a kid, I always grew up thinking that I would be the hero, like Link from The Legend of Zelda. That's the main person that I took inspiration from. Another one, I guess, maybe would be Peter Pan. So, you know, I always had these little, like, Lego created swords or plastic swords growing up, thinking, yeah, I'll save the day, I'll save the princess. You know, that's everyone's dream, right? It's kind of embarrassing sometimes, but then again, it was just innocence, you know? That's just the way we grew up, you know? We didn't know much about the world. We just saw what we just saw and absorbed various types of media through books, movies, TV shows, cartoons, all that stuff, you know? And it kind of built our personality in a way, and it kind of made us realize maybe what we could be in the future could be something related to that. Or as you go on, maybe opinions will change. Maybe our thoughts will develop over time. But for me, like I said, it was all about saving the princess, defeating tough monsters, you know, getting all these cool stuff, being the hero. So, I remember growing up, I remember seeing the first ever military commercial, for me at least, one of my first ever, was watching a guy climb this obstacle course, right? Deadly obstacle course full of fire and steel. And eventually he grabs a sword and slays a dragon, right? And afterwards he gets transformed to where his clothing becomes the Marine Corps uniform. And it says the few, the proud, the Marines, and you see everyone cheering in the background. Yeah, it was like, that was probably one of the best commercials for the military I've ever seen in my life. You slay a dragon, you become a Marine, right? Because the whole point of that whole commercial was to show that the military itself is not a cakewalk, right? You've got to be determined, you've got to be tough, but in the end, it'll pay off. But I remember the most motivational movie when it came down to the military service would have to be, it's kind of a strange movie to think about, but it's called Starship Troopers. Now, that was the futuristic movie where you have a bunch of kids from high school joining the military, and they go on this different planet and to fight giant bugs, right? It sounds kind of corny, but the movie was crazy. And I thought to myself, man, I could probably do this. This is great. My first opportunity for the military service came to around, I'd say, junior year of high school, right? 11th grade. So in junior year, we had a Marine Corps recruiter come into our gym class, and we did various amounts of exercise. We were worn out. We got a little tiny little taste of what kind of exercises you can expect in the military, right? And there was this other guy there too, right? He was also in the service. He was also helping the recruiter because he was a former student of the high school, right? He graduated, went through boot camp, and now he's back home on leave helping the recruiter do his job, basically. So I remember the first time they were doing, like, before we went to the gym and to the locker rooms to change, everyone had to do as many pull-ups as possible before they can change and go to their next class. So I did quite a few. Oh my gosh, the recruiter was pretty mean to everybody, you know, but he had to be. He had to push them, you know? So eventually, I kept getting calls, right? Now, the Navy called me first, and they took 3 hours, just about. They had to, like, sit down, tell me what I wanted to do, my opportunities were, maybe watch, like, a 15, 20-minute video about it. It was just nonstop, and I'm like, okay, I get it. And I said to myself, could I be a sailor? Would that be something I would be interested in? would it make me less of a man? I mean, not to make fun of the Navy, because I was in the Marines. Let's just cut to the, let's just give you a little spoiler. I was in the Marines. That's technically a department of the Navy, but you know, we all have our little fun moments here and there with different branches. Every branch wants to be the best, and they consider every other branch to be whatever, you know, especially the Marines. Oh God, the Marines. Oh God. You talk to a Marine and you talk to him about like, what about the Army or the Air Force? Oh God. Oh, trash talking galore. They'll say that the Air Force is pampered and they still complain. Well, kind of true, maybe, but I don't know. So afterwards, the Marine Corps recruiter called me. You know how long he took? He took 20 minutes, maybe less. He was quick, down to the point. Hey, you want to do this? You got these opportunities. He'll show you a 5-minute video of what it's like. And I'm like, you know, Marines do sound tougher. And that recruitment session we had was very short, very much down to the point. Sure thing. So when you go into the military, you have to take this test called the ASVAB. It's an acronym for the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery. Essentially, it gives you a test of all these questions, and it determines what kind of score you can get, how smart you are. And this score allows you to choose more varieties of jobs, depending on how high it is. If you got like the highest score, you could probably be like military intelligence or like electronics operator or whatever. But, of course, there's no offense, there's not a lot of smart people, so they tend, even if they did get a high score, it's still your choice on what job you want, right? A lot of people choose to be grunts, or that MOS is 0311. Grunts are basically, you know, ground troops, basically. It's probably the most common, because it's probably the class, it's the job that definitely is amongst the lowest for the ASVAB scores. So if somebody is not that smart and they want to join the military and they pass the ASVAB, like a really low score, they could be a grunt, right? It's kind of harsh to think about it, but, you know, at least you're useful. At least you're doing something. You know, you're like the workhorse of the entire Marine Corps is pretty much grunts, because every Marine is a rifleman. You know, that was established a long time ago. So afterwards, after the test, around my junior year, there was also, you also had to do your oath of enlistment. So after some medical physical tests, they had to make sure you were still like able to perform physical tasks that they require you to do. Make sure you were constantly aware of what kind of knowledge you need to understand and all that. So let me look up the oath of enlistment. So the oath of enlistment is, I, state your name, do solemnly swear that I support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I bear true faith and allegiance to the same, and that I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me. According to regulations of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, so help me God. So, you basically raise your right hand, your palm facing forward, your fingers pointing up along with your thumb, you're only raising one hand here. So you say this and you sign the paper and there you go. Government's got you. And yeah, so afterwards, but here's the thing. I was still in junior year of high school, so I had one more year to go. So I could not go to boot camp until I graduated high school, because that was one of the requirements of you getting a high school diploma or a GED. Well, I graduated high school, and it was probably the scariest summer of my life, because after that, I only had, 2 months, because I eventually went to boot camp in August 9th, 2004. Yeah, almost 20 years ago, now that I think about it. I'm like, man, where did time go? So, I graduated high school, and August 9th, ready to go. We went to a hotel first, got into an aircraft, you know. We stopped by, what was that place? Somewhere in North Carolina. Charlottesville, probably, I think. I think that's one of the stops. And then afterwards, we went to South Carolina. And that airport was quiet. Quiet. Super quiet. We were all scared, right? We go in there, and we're sitting down. A bunch of people had their backpacks on, all that stuff. And we're going, like, okay, we're all meeting here. What's going on today? Everyone's talking. I'm looking behind me, and I'm looking at everybody that's showing up. I'm like, wow, we got a lot of people today. I can't believe it. Yeah. And silence. I turn around. There is a Marine drill instructor staring at us. And we're just... I've never heard a crowd of people go from talking to, like, kind of giggling and laughing to just stops. The drill instructor looks at us, doesn't make a noise, doesn't say anything. He points to the wall. And we all run to the wall and line up. And one by one, we go through. And we're getting weighed in. We make sure that we don't have flat feet. Answer a few questions, sign a few papers, all that stuff. Once that happened, we went outside. And we were standing there waiting for the bus. Bus shows up. We go on. And they tell us, this is at nighttime, by the way. They tell us to put our heads down so we don't see what's going on outside the window. But we're still kind of like, you know, peeking a little bit, asking people like, man, I made a mistake. I don't want to do this, you know. Everyone's kind of getting those second thoughts right away. Well, sure enough, we show up. We stop. Marine drill instructor tells us we're on Paris Island, blah, 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 blah. Get off my bus right now. And we all run off the bus and we see these yellow footprints. So we just choose one, stand on it, position of attention. Basically, you're standing straight up, your feet slightly apart, your hands at your side, your head pointing up, you know, not moving that much, right? And, oh, God, the first night of boot camp was absolutely crazy. So you afterwards, you go into this building. And you're getting your haircuts. I'm not quite sure which one came first. It was either your haircuts first. You had to make the very quick phone call. You had to remember the phone number of your house or, like, close relatives and all that. Dialed the number, left a voicemail saying, I've arrived at Paris Island at this time, this day, blah, 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 hang up. That's it. That was the only time I left a voicemail. And I wasn't able to talk to my parents directly until like 3 months later. The only kind of communication I got from the outside world were letters. I'm not kidding. No text messages, no going on the computer to check your emails, no going on social media, nothing. You had letters. That's all you had. It was like, wow. It's like, yikes. But can you imagine nowadays where people go into the military and they don't have their phones for 3 months? They can't check their social media. They can't go on to Reddit to read articles. They can't go on Discord and yell at people. Nothing. For 3 months. For 3 months straight, you are in a squad bay full of other people with drill instructors that will yell at you every single day, telling you how to get dressed quicker, various ways to put you in line to go to chow hall. It's definitely a life changer. The first few weeks are going to be hell because you're starting to learn things. You're not used to this pacing. And, oh, God, but the chow halls were good. Every time you went to chow, it was a relief. But you still had to eat very quickly. And the Marines, when you get your food on the tray, you have to sit down. You can't just hunch over and, like, talk to people and use both hands or whatever. Nuh-uh. No talking. You sit down with your tray, back straight. Left hand, whatever non-dominant hand, stays on your lap. And your dominant hand is being used to do everything. You can only eat with one hand, really. We got used to it after a while, but I think to myself, man. And you had to eat fast, too, because I think the rule is if your senior drill instructor is done eating first, then everyone's done. So you had to eat quick. You had to eat very quick. So... And there was also a bunch of things, like Sunday was your weekend mass, whatever. If everyone went to church, people didn't go to church, they would just sit down on our footstool, foot lockers. We set our foot lockers in the middle, and we just sit down on them, and we just write letters, and we read them. And afterwards, we turned to field day, which is basically cleaning the whole squad bay, like spick and span, right? And I remember part of the cleaning was moving your racks from one side, getting the floor all wet, grabbing a towel, putting your hand on it, going on all fours, and then sliding the towel up and down. You're basically like human mops. Very efficient, but very tiring. Oh my gosh, you would be sweating nonstop by doing that over and over. So there's so many things that you had to do. Like, there's morning ritual of
everybody like kind of doing like a low duck walk in a way, and using like a little brush and sweeping all the dirt from one end of the squad bay to the middle of the squad bay, and someone else sweeping it up, all that stuff. There's so many things that become routine that eventually you actually start getting used to it. You know, you used to waking up with everyone yelling lights, 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 and the dress under yelling at you. Which, by the way, the Marine Corps drill instructors, they yell, like, not just the way they yell, it's the way they sound too. They literally sound like they got frogs in their throats that just won't go away. It's crazy. Normally, you would think they'd be yelling like, "Hey, get online right now!" No. And the Marines, they sometimes go, "Hey, get online right now! Go, run!" I'm not kidding. They sound like that. You go and watch videos, you'll hear them, and it's terrifying. It's terrifying when they yell at you like that. You don't want to laugh. You just want to do what they say because, oh my God, stop yelling at me. So, like I said, you got used to it after a while. Now, if one person gets sick in the squad bay, everyone gets sick. I don't know how they managed to still recruit people during COVID-19, right? I'm pretty sure they wore masks at all times, but my gosh, can you imagine a whole squad bay of people getting sick? A whole squad bay. I don't know if they found ways to separate people more often. I'm not quite sure how they did it, but oh gosh, it has to be a miracle if you can go through boot camp with COVID-19 going around, right? So, when I was at boot camp, it was hot. It was during the summer, and you get these flag warnings. What it means is, when you look outside, there is a flag with a basic plain color that it tells you exactly whether or not it's safe enough to exercise outside, right? So green, I think, is like normal, you know, weather's nice. I think red is caution, means that it's very hot outside. You could still exercise and all that, but make sure it's limited. And then there's black flag, which is way too hot. Do not do anything outside. It's dangerous, right? And anytime there was a black flag, we had to go inside and do something called drills. So what are drills? So we get the M16 assault rifle eventually, right? And this is our baby now, right? This is our boy or girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever you want, right? And we have to do these drills where basically you stand in place and you practice things like left shoulder, present arms, right shoulder, and then eventually you go outside and you could start learning drills while marching. So you do the same things, left shoulder, but you're marching at the same time. And if there was ever a time where it was a black flag, we didn't go outside. We just stayed inside and did our practice. It was pretty much embedded into my brain to the point where I never forgot it. I could grab something. If I grab like a long roll of wrapping paper, right? I'm thinking it's a rifle and I just want to do left shoulder, right shoulder. That's all I'm thinking about. I think one of my best things I've ever done in boot camp itself was the rifle range. Oh God, I was a good shot. I was a good shot. I think my first score was a 232. And then in the fleet, it got better and better. But in boot camp, it was a good time. I'd say another fun moment in the military itself was the obstacle course, the physical obstacle course. Things like you start off grabbing a bar and then climbing over it. You climb over everything. And at the end, you grab this rope and you climb it. I could climb that rope so fast. Everyone's going, what the heck? They thought I was a monkey. Like, I grab the rope with my legs and arms. Joop, 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 joop. Like, I personally, if I could have asked, I would have said, can I do it again? I would have done it like 3 times. I would have loved it. In terms of what I did not like in boot camp, swim qualification. I do not like deep water. I cannot swim. I freak out. I don't know how I passed it. Somehow, I managed to learn how to do backstrokes. That was the biggest thing. I hated going in deep water. I finally was able to qualify by swimming in deep water doing a backstroke. I remember one of the female instructors going, oh my gosh. I was like, I will never forget her face. I will never forget her voice. She was almost as bad as the male instructors. The females in the Marines, in terms of drill instructors and the recruits, they are like 10 times louder than the males. I am not kidding. One time we were sitting there for gas chamber training, right? I'll get into that later. But anyway, we sit there and we're like, males, males yell, aye, sir. And we're like, aye, sir. And then it's like, and then one of the female instructors is like, BS, let me hear you say it. And then all these female recruits are yelling, aye, ma'am. And I'm like, and my ears, my ears were ringing a little bit. I'm like, ow, Jesus. So, okay, gas chamber. So what it is basically they teach you how to wear our chemical mask. Because back in Desert Storm, there were chemical attacks, right? We had to be prepared for them. So they taught us how to use the mask, how to create the seal. What happens when you take off your mask, you put it back on, and you exhale whatever that was stuck in the mask, and you make sure you have a seal and make sure you're breathing all right. So they put you in this small, like, house-looking area, and you're standing there with the gas mask on, and they put these little tablets into this burner, and these tablets are generate this gas. It's called CS gas. It's kind of like a tear gas. And normally in the fleet, they put like one or two pills in there, and it's not that strong. But when you're in boot camp, they'll put like six plus in there. Oh my God. And you could feel when the gas is coming out, you could feel whatever exposed skin you have tingling. Right? It's not a dangerous gas, but it is definitely irritating because it feels like it's slightly burning and tingling your whole skin. And when you take off your mask and you put it back on, even though you're not breathing in the gas, you could still feel it on your face. Oh my gosh. As soon as you go outside and they tell you to take off your mask and hold it in your left hand and then hold out your arm. You're kind of like T-posing outside of the gas chamber. As soon as you exit, you T-pose essentially and you run out there with your arms spread. They tell you don't touch your face. And your face is burning. Your eyes are burning. You're snot coming out of your nose. It's like a freaking giant thick vine hanging out of your nose. That's how much snot is coming out. I'm sorry if I'm describing it too much here, but that's exactly what happens. You'll see it. And if you ever see videos of it, or if you were actually there, you'll know what I'm talking about. Man, I hated the gas chamber. I never wanted to do that, but you had to do it every once in a while in the fleet. But like I said, it's not as bad, but it's still, you don't want to do it, right? Same goes for rifle range qualifications. Every so often, you have to make sure you're still up to speed with your rifle training. Because, like I said, every Marine is a rifleman. Swim qualification, I've had that a couple times before, but it's not as bad as the fleet. It's not as bad as the fleet. All you have to do is swim, like, I don't know how many meters, and then you jump off a thing and you swim back and that's it. That's it. Basically, you just got to know how to do a short distance swimming and jumping from a high area. And I hated jumping into the deep water from a high. I hate heights and I hate deep water. So combine those two together. Oh, God. Oh, God. I hated it. So after a while, got to the point where it was at, I think it was like November of 2004. Finally graduated from boot camp, right? I don't know how I did it. I did it. And, you'd come out different, right? I came in boot camp, you know, with, you know, full head of hair, you know. I didn't know what I was getting into. I get out. I have a tan line on my head because you constantly have to wear a cover. That's what they call hats. And you got, like, there's, like, a sun. I got, my face is mostly dark, but the rest of my, top of my head's all bright. That's going to happen during the summer, especially. And I came out in boot camp, and I weighed only 140 pounds. I was a stick. Back then, not much anymore, but man, I was a stick back then. I could do anything. You tell me to climb a tree, I could do it right away. I could run 3 miles without getting tired. I was fit. I was fit as a fiddle. And the crazy part is, after I got out of boot camp, my parents and I, we went to Cracker Barrel. And as soon as I got my food, I ate it in like a minute. Less than that. Everyone else is going, what the heck? How'd you eat so fast? And I didn't realize it. I'm like, oh, I did eat really quick. It's like, you're so used to boot camp that it was kind of hard to transition back to civilian life because now you're not getting yelled at anymore. And you're like, this is strange. I've heard some people actually waking up and getting out of their beds yelling, oh, sir. Or they hear the lights go on and, you know, they're getting like, PTSD of these events. Between boot camp and the next phase, there was a little bit of leave, right? You could have a longer time at home if you help recruiters, but I didn't do that. I spent, I think, a week, maybe less. And then I had to go back to North Carolina to, I think, Camp Johnson and eventually Camp Devil Dog to perform in this thing called Marine Combat Training. Now, if you're a grunt and your MOS is 0311, it's not MCT you go to. I forgot what the other training part of it is. I forgot what it was called, but it was MCT is essentially where non-grunts go to. It's essentially a slightly more advanced version of training. It's kind of like boot camp, but you're not getting yelled at as much. But you're still relatively new, so you will get yelled at times. But I loved MCT. I loved it so much. Like, yeah, you were constantly active, but at the same time, you were doing so many fun things. Like, you were learning how to fire new types of weaponry, like the M240 Golf, the M250 Cal, the Mark 19. We were even offered a demonstration on somebody firing a real AT-4 rocket launcher. You know, we sat there in the green hill, stood back, you know, obviously a good distance away. He fires this thing and hits a target. Oh my God, we felt the ground shake and we were so happy. Our instructor puts that fired rocket launcher down, right? And he jumps up and down like a little kid yelling, "This is freaking awesome!" We didn't get to fire real rockets, though. They had the shells of the AT-4, but they were repurposed for the sake of putting a 9mm tracer in the back of it. And then when you fire the trigger for the rocket launcher, it's just this little tracer 9mm round simulating a rocket. So basically, you're trying to get an idea of how far, if something is this far, how much do you have to lean it? Or how far do you have to elevate, right? And that's essentially the cheapest way to figure out if you're going to hit your target is by the 9mm tracer round. But I think the scariest thing in MCT, the scariest thing, was throwing a live frag grenade. Now, you got these little frag grenades, the little round ones you see in Call of Duty, right? Modern Warfare. You have one of these in your hand. You're terrified. Because you think to yourself, this little thing can blow me up and everyone else around me. So, grab it onto it, of course. Put your thumb over the latch. You hold it with two hands. They tell you to safety clip. Take off the safety clip that covers the latch. Pull the pin. Still got your thumb over the latch. Prepare to throw it. You're kind of like doing like a muscle pose. Your one arm is outstretched with, while the other one's kind of like making like you're flexing your bicep, but that's the arm you have the grenade holding onto. And then you throw it. As soon as you throw it, you have to hit this, what looks like a candy cane marker. You throw it. And as soon as you do that, the instructor grabs you and puts you behind cover until that grenade explosion occurs, and that explosion is loud. If you think they're loud in Call of Duty, throw one in real life. Oh God, they're loud. The other thing I did not like about MCT the most was called land navigation. Now, you go and you have a compass, and you get an idea of the territory that you have to go through. And everyone got lost. You're supposed to go from one direction, from A to B, to B to C to D, whatever. Everyone got lost. And the worst part is, part of the land had all these giant swamps. And I fell in, like, halfway into the swamp one time, right? Oh, it was cold. I was miserable. Ugh. Can you imagine having to walk the rest of the way in the cold with pretty much drenched gear? And you kind of smell funny because it's a swamp. I hate it there. But aside from that, MCT was amazing. I liked it. I can't say the same thing for the next part, which is MOS training. So after that training in Camp Devil Dog, North Carolina, we eventually had to go to my main job training, which was artillery. I was an 0811. You're right. Field artillery means we operated the 155 millimeter howitzers. And we had to go all the way to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, which Oklahoma, geez, there's nothing there around that base. All you had to do in that base was either get a TV or a game station and play it at your locker in the squad bay. Yes, we're in squad base again. And or you just go hit a taxi with a bunch of other people to the mall or see a movie. There wasn't really that much to do otherwise. So the worst part about Fort Sill was the cold. Now, we were there. We arrived before Christmas. We had our Christmas break, and then we arrived afterwards. Sometime in January and February, we were training there. Oh, God, it was freezing cold. Can you imagine waking up and putting on your physical training gear or PT gear? You know, sweatpants, sweat tops, sweat bottoms. And you go out there, and it feels like it's 10 degrees Fahrenheit. It is freaking freezing out there. And I remember every time your name was called, you have to go out and wait for the instructors to put you in a formation to get you ready for exercise. And I remember everybody running outside and huddling as close as they possibly could to keep warm before the higher-ups came out and we had to get in formation. Oh, and the worst part about it was that the elevation, I believe, was higher, so there was slightly less air. So even if you were physically fit throughout boot camp and all that, you were going to struggle because you need oxygen. You need oxygen during your exercises, and there was less of it because of the elevation, and it was cold, and you were like, oh, God. Oh, yeah, throughout that whole time, it was constant learning. I was constantly tired. Berated, everything. You think of it, right? But then again, the reason why they're like that is because the job we're doing is tough. It's artillery, right? It's dangerous. We're firing 155 millimeter cannons, firing these projectiles that can go so far and cause so much damage, right? We need to be proficient at our jobs, because if someone's not safe, that's the end of it. That's all I gotta say. And a little off topic, right after I got out of the service, I believe there was an accident that occurred. Nobody was killed, fortunately, but there was an accident that involved a minor explosion. I think one of the, I don't know if the round itself exploded within the tube itself or if the, whatever, I can't remember exactly what happened, but I know there was an accident. And like I said, that's why you got to be proficient at your job, because you never know what'll happen. So, going past MOS training, I eventually had to move back to North Carolina to Camp Lejeune. So I'm now in the fleet. This is basically where I'm finally assigned a unit based on what job I was trained on. So Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, went there. It wasn't too bad at first, you know, we got introduced. But when you're a new person going into the fleet, yeah, you're going to be a target for a while. If you're a private or PFC, maybe even a Lance Corporal. Lance Corporal is when you kind of get more respect, but if you're like a private or PFC, yikes, you are going to get targeted a lot, right? And mostly it's all about higher ups, like Lance Corporals or Corporals or Sergeants, basically saying, hey, see this rank? I get to tell you what to do. Dig a hole. Hey, you, dig a hole. Well, that was actually something you had to do in the, that was something you mostly had to do in when you were out in the field. So I'll get to that later on. But anyway, the main thing I didn't like about the fleet, essentially, was constantly being harassed because you're new, obviously. Sometimes you might get a bad roommate. I've had one good roommate at first, but then you get roommates who will constantly steal from you, people that will yell at you for no reason. Oh, God. Or cooperate with others to help them make your life a living hell. I've had one moment where I had a cool roommate, right? But our door could not lock because it wasn't functioning. We later found out we could just unscrew like a bolt a little bit. We could turn the locking mechanism over and then unscrew the bolt a little bit to keep it locked. But when we could not lock our room, that was terrible. We had people opening the door, making it fly open, and of course I had to close it. One time, this guy opened the door, And not kidding, by the way, opens the door, had a basketball in his hands, throws it right into my face at top speed. Oh, God, that hurt. So I pop the ball and throw it back out there, and I close the door. And then they get all angry at me, going, "Why'd you pop my ball for?" I'm like, "You threw it at me." And fortunately, I wasn't bleeding, but man, if I was bleeding, whew, that would have been terrible. There was other times where some people would be so much of a troll. They would open the door. They literally threw, I don't know what kind of firecracker it was. It was one of those ones where you light the end of it, and it had these little like red sticks. It looks like tiny little red sticks of dynamite. You know what I'm talking about? But like a bunch of them. And they would just constantly pop in my room. And people were throwing fireworks in there left and right. And it actually hit one of our guys too. So and I think that was that point where they even had the military police involved, because you cannot do that. That's dangerous right there. Throwing fireworks in people's rooms like that. In my chat, cute boy suddenly says, "Can I have her a slice of pizza? Please, please, please. Only if you say please some more." But how you doing, by the way? Like I said, we are recording for the podcast, but we also record it live on Twitch. So any kind of person that chats and wants to ask any kind of questions, we will eventually get to that. But anyway, where was I? So yeah, the fleet. So going back to that whole idea of telling people to dig holes, in the Marines, when you're in field artillery, probably other jobs too, you have to go into something called field ops or field operations. Basically, it's kind of like a camping trip, but instead of tents or and campfires and marshmallows, it's tents, artillery pieces, and people constantly yelling at you to dig holes. That's basically all you did. If you were the new guy and you messed up, or the higher-ups were just bored, they'd be like, "Hey, you, grab a shovel and dig a hole, and I'll see how deep it is later on." And you're constantly being worn out, digging a hole for no reason at all. Just dig a hole. Exercise. Because they just want you... They're basically kind of flexing their rank, going, "Yeah, I get to tell you what to do, and you can't do anything about it." So I think this is fun to tell you to do things that you don't want to do, because, I mean, I'm not good at anything else, but I get to tell you what to do. Now, that's not always true. There are some corporals and sergeants who are really cool, who know their job very well. There are some people who are complete a-holes and also know the job very well. But then there are some others who will act like a jerk and probably don't even know their job whatsoever. But they want to have that power over you because it feels good and it establishes them as an authority figure that is to be feared. So that's part of the whole military thing, by the way. As far as the barracks, right? Now, there's a couple ways to live. You can live on base in the barracks, on base in the housing they give you, or you can live off base, right? It was way more expensive to live off base, unless you were married and you were a higher rank, maybe. But they always tell you in the Marines or any military job, if you have a barracks room, right, don't get married. Because if you're in the barracks, you're pretty much taken care of, right? You don't have to worry about expensive, you don't have to worry about bills or anything with housing and all that. Or you don't have to worry about the extreme amount of bills that you get for living off base. See, I kept it simple. I lived in the barracks room. Yeah, it wasn't always nice and all, but it was better than going outside into my own house and not being able to afford anything, right? Stay in the barracks, because if you wanted to eat for free, there's chow halls right down. You just walk down there, show them your pass, and you get a free meal. That was it. Of course, I bought snacks and stuff from the on-base, you know, market. But aside from that, like I said, keep it simple. Stay in your room and get free meals from the chow halls. You don't have to pay that much money for anything, really. What else? The only thing I really had to pay for was internet, because barely anybody had it. And in North Carolina, the only thing we had available to us was called Charter Internet Service, which it did the job, but wasn't the most reliable. And the problem is people didn't want to pay for internet at all because they were always low on money. I don't know how in the military, how everyone was still poor. I mean, granted, we get paid like $500 or $600 every 2 weeks. Granted, it's not that much. But then again, you're not paying for rent either. And you're not paying for that much food unless you go out and do some shopping or you go outside to buy some McDonald's or Burger King or Dunkin' Donuts or whatever. But aside from that, you're not really spending that much money. So if you were really smart and just went to chow halls, went on base, and didn't go out to spend your money on like strippers and alcohol, you'd be set. But couldn't say the same for everyone else. And there was constantly people going to me knowing that I was Rich Uncle Pennybags saying, can I borrow $20 or whatever? Or can I borrow like this much money? Now, I didn't really like to give money to people I did not like that much or people who didn't treat me with respect. But like sometimes I still would because I'm a nice guy regardless of being in the military. I've had my moments. I was more of a hothead back in the military, right? That's why whenever you see me stream and I get angry, that's kind of the military aspect of myself kind of like screaming at my monitor because like when I was in the service, anything I did, I was always angry. I don't know what the heck I was. I guess it's what you would call temperance, youth temperance, I guess, is a way to describe it. Kind of like The Patriot, where Mel Gibson said I was temperate in my youth. But I guess, I don't know. But anyway, yeah, the whole, like, I don't understand how people could not have money in the military. Like, they just weren't smart about their money. There was only one guy that I actually lended money to. Good guy, by the way. Like, I trusted him so much but we still had to sign a paper. He asked me a big favor, and he was so afraid to ask everybody else. He wanted about almost $2,000, right, for car payments, right? And he eventually did pay me back for that. But people were going, what the heck? You let him borrow almost $2,000 for a car payment? I'm like, yeah, because I trust this guy. And he did pay me back, and I'm very thankful for that. All right, so after that, aside field operations, aside bad roommates or people who can't afford things, there was also the part about going on deployment. So my first deployment was in 2005, late 2005 through 2006. And we only spent like 6 months in country, 5 or 6 months or so. So the first time we went to Iraq, not going to specify exactly where because, you know, loose lips sink ships, right? First time we went over there, we were artillery support. Now, we had to get there by ship. And the ship that we were on, oh, God, it's scrapped right now, right? The ship is gone. But the ship was called the USS Nassau. And I remember telling this story to somebody else at my one job recently. And he knew what I was talking about. And he said, oh, I'm so sorry. Because that ship was terrible. It always broke down. It wasn't the best shape. And the worst part about the ship was that everyone was so close together. Like, he just didn't... Like, it's one thing seeing the same person over and over again in the barracks, because at least after a while you could separate and go on your merry way. When you're on a ship, and the size, it's like, imagine a house, a small house, that was essentially the size of your little berthing area. And there were approximately 4, 8, 12, 16, 20, 24, 20, 32, 36, 44, 48, about 40 or so people in that tiny room. How do you fit that many people? Well, you had beds or racks. There were 4 stack racks. And if you go into those racks, you can't sit down and like sit too high. It's kind of like rolling into like a little like a bed that's the size of a coffin, right? You roll in there and you could see the surface of the bed on top of you. It's literally like a foot away from your face. So you couldn't really... When you wake up, you gotta make sure you don't hit your head. But it wasn't too bad, though, obviously. After we got to Iraq, the first deployment, we got to the base. And we did artillery support, where we just... Whenever we get a firing mission, we get up from what we're doing. And we mostly just fired illumination rounds at night. And sometimes we had fire missions here and there for artillery support for other units around the area. You know, it was not that bad, you know. A lot of downtime, to be honest. You just sat down, you played horseshoes, you talked about different things. Occasionally you get that fire mission and you run towards your artillery piece and, you know, fire a couple rounds and that's it. Wasn't too bad of a deployment. The best part about it was going to a place called Rota, Spain for a Liberty Port. Liberty Port essentially means that you stop there and it's kind of like a little like week-long vacation. It's like, okay, everybody, be safe, have fun. Go to the... And pretty much everyone that went to Rota, Spain was drinking. Now, the people over there knew the military was around. As soon as they get word that the military ship has stopped, all the bars, all the restaurants are getting ready. Like, dude, here they come. We're going to get so much money. We're going to be... We're like, the whole entire bar is going to be run dry because the Marines are here. They're going to drink everything. And we're going to make so much money out of this. And that's true. And I had to help so many people get back to the ship because they were so drunk. In fact, I remember one of my friends. So we go in. Good guy, by the way. Big country guy. Goes in and he says, you know what? I'm going to try to outdrink these two German women. I don't think that's a good idea. I didn't say that to him, but I'm like, yeah, I don't think that's a good idea. Now, I didn't drink myself. I wasn't old enough at the time. I was only like, I was 19 or 20 years old around this time period. It's like, I think I was 20, I think. I can't remember. I was young. I was super young. All I really did was just sit there and be like, I'll just have a Coke or Pepsi. That's it. You know? So he comes back. He didn't win, obviously. These two German women were like, probably like, weren't even fazed. We had to carry him back almost to the ship. And I have a picture of us. I took like a little selfie of myself, my other buddy, and the other guy that was so wasted. He was extremely wasted. He didn't even know what the hell was going on. But he recovered, of course, so he was all right. So we got back after that first deployment. We were greeted at home. You know, it was nice to be home because when you're in Iraq for 6 months or maybe less than that, you're used to seeing tan. And when you get home, the grass is so much greener. The sky is so much bluer. Like it's like your eyes were like devoid of any kind of color and saturation when you're over in Iraq. And when you get home, it's like you turned up the saturation filter in your eyes. And you're like, oh my God, everything's so bright. So when I returned from the first deployment, you know, met family members again, friends, all that stuff. It was basically business as usual going back to the base. You know, you train, you get new roommates, all that stuff. Until the second deployment. So the second deployment, we went to Iraq again. Sort of the same area, different base though. So this time we're not artillery. That's good. We don't like lugging around giant artillery pieces and firing those things, right? Before we went to the second deployment, however, we had to practice on new artillery pieces. Originally we were operating M198 howitzers. They were old, right? They eventually were going to get scrapped and replaced with the new M777. The Army gets them first. The Army gets everything first, especially the Air Force. The Marines just get the stuff late and we make do with what we have. And despite training on the new artillery piece, which we still did, even after the second deployment, we didn't take him with us this time. We were convoy security. And during this time, all we did was we had a mission, get in our vehicles, get everything loaded up, and we make sure that supplies are being transported from base to base securely. That was it. Some trips were short, some trips were longer. We don't know what we don't know what's going on. We don't know like exactly what we're transporting or anything. I think we do inspect them just to make sure everything's all good to go. Sometimes it's not even supplies. Sometimes it's actually like prisoners. Yeah, we escort prisoners. And you know, just go back and forth and all that. It was just a normal job, basically. And I remember that second deployment was so hot. Right, I went to the first deployment late 2005, early 2006, right, during the winter time. This deployment was 2007 from, I think, April all the way to was it October or something like that?
Yeah.
It was really hot there. Dry heat, but it's still hot. Heat is heat. You're going to be sweating. Especially in vehicles with no air conditioning, by the way. So, oh man. Lots of fun times there. But eventually, like I said, like just like boot camp, we just got used to it. It became routine. Oh, there's a mission on this day. Let's go here. Let's do this mission, whatever. Downtime, we either go to the motor pool and we basically maintain our equipment. Sometimes we have free days. You know, it all depends. And later on, I think sometime during the deployment, I forgot what month exactly. I think it was like, I can't remember what month it was. Was it April? Was it late April or so or something like that? We had to stop our convoy. So then everyone's like, what's going on? Well, EOD is here. They found an IED, improvised explosive device, because the enemy likes to put these on the roads and blow vehicles up, try to kill as many Marines or any military American personnel as possible, right? So they found it, and they were going to do something called a controlled detonation, basically set up some extra charges and blow it up so no one else falls into it. Okay. Boom. Pretty cool. Job's done. Let's move on. So we go into this base. We're not even that far away from it, right? We make a left turn. We hit a secondary bomb. My vehicle gets hit. The fuel line is ruptured, and the whole vehicle is on fire instantly. It sounded like you got like a full paint can and you punctured it, and you hear that sound, you know? That's all you heard. And the whole vehicle was engulfed. I could not see, right? The door got jammed a little bit from it too, by the way. So I finally got out, rushed out, and I like make sure I wasn't on fire still. Minor burns on my face, minor burns, whatever. Then I looked at my left hand and there was no hair on it and it was pink. And it was like radiating. It was going from like pain, then down, and then back up, down. It was a constant, it felt like it was weird. It was painful, yeah, but it was kind of like, it was a weird, like, pain would go from a 3 to like a 5 or 6, and then go back down to a 3, and it would do this every once in a while. Now, fortunately, there was no nerve damage, but they told me it was a mild second degree burn on your left hand. We had a gunner who also got burns on his left and right arms, because he took him longer to get out. And, you know, they said, we're getting a Purple Heart after this because that was an enemy IED and we were injured technically in combat. Wasn't in a direct, like, firefight, but it was an enemy bomb. So we survived it. And I'm sitting there. I'm lying down there. They're like, putting cream on my hand and wrapping it up. One of the docs looks at me. He's looking at me. He's looking up and down. He goes, hey, buddy, you want some morphine? I'm like, sure, why not? You're offering it. He pops it in the side of my leg, and not like 10 minutes later, you get that buzzy feeling. Like you've drank a few beers. You know how you get that little buzz in your head, you know? That's what it kind of felt like. The pain went away. And I was kind of goofy. I was like, hey, I got some morphine. That's pretty cool. So, and I remember the gunner, our gunner, he's like, I don't know what you're laughing at. I got two of them. That whole time, that night, instead of like shivering in fear from the fact that we could have died that night, we were laughing nonstop. Everyone else would have been like, I'm so scared. I can't believe that happened. Us, we nearly died. We're laughing. Got two things of morphine. Oh, you're so lucky, man. Yeah, sometimes they say that laughter is the best medicine. And for this night, that was true. A little bit of morphine makes it better too, but never got addicted to this stuff. That's the only time I've ever had morphine. So like I said, I'm not trying to promote the idea of using drugs, people. Do not do drugs because drugs are bad, okay? Morphine is definitely a thing that you can get addicted to. So if you are considering it because you are on drugs or you know someone else who has it, tell them to stop. Don't do it. Don't do drugs. Right. So anyway, Second deployment. What else I could say about the second deployment? Chow halls were good. The best part also is that sometimes for security reasons, we had military personnel from Uganda. And I believe their terminology for saying hello is called Jumbo. And every time we see these guys, we yell, Jumbo! And they give us a smile and they yell back, you know, Jumbo! That's the only time we ever interacted with these guys was just yelling their greeting. That was it. What else was there? Oh yeah, there was one time we had to do a convoy security mission. It was a 12-hour drive near the Jordan border. Oh god. But the trip was worth it because we heard a helicopter landing and we got to talk to and shake hands with a celebrity, and his name was Chuck Norris. I kid you not, I met Chuck Norris. I was starstruck. I shook his hand. I had an awkward smile, but my gosh, I met Chuck Norris. Shook his hand, too. He had a firm handshake, too. My gosh, I was surprised my whole body didn't explode. And I have proof, by the way. I will have to post this on Twitter after this episode is done uploading on Spotify. But I do have proof. So after all these deployments are done, eventually we have to do all these classes because 2008 is coming up. My 4 years are just about up. I'm not going to re-enlist. I'm not going to do another 4 years in the military. I'm out. So eventually I do all those classes. I get out of the military. Pretty much after that, I've had a few jobs, went to college, got my associate's degree in education, which I never really used it. I don't have an honest motivation to go to that education anymore. Maybe down the road, possibly, if worst comes to worst, because my friend keeps begging me to work at her job. Had a girlfriend, broke up, gained weight. I'm like 200 some pounds already. That's what happens usually with military personnel sometimes, but I've got to work on that, to be honest, because I got a freaking belly here. You know, still play games. I became a streamer a long time ago. Still not popular, but whatever. Got into the furry fandom in 2012, you know, met more friends and all that. It's pretty cool. That's why I've got this little 2D character if you're watching on Twitch. Currently I'm working at Amazon right now, 3 12-hour shift days. Not too bad. It was worse during peak season or around Christmas time, because that's when you get really freaking busy. Aside from that, I still stream on Twitch and I make these podcasts. And don't worry, I'm not suffering from any kind of post-traumatic stress disorder. If it ever comes, I've got the VA to help me out, which, speaking of the VA, remember how I said I got the Purple Heart? Well, you actually get a card that lets you know that you have medical insurance because of that injury you sustained and the medal you received. So, I think a couple years ago, actually, I've had something called UC, which stands for ulcerative colitis, basically inflammation within my colon. I don't know how I got it. It wasn't from military or anything. It just happened. So they eventually did some scans and told me, okay, well, we're going to give you these infusions to heal it. It's kind of experimental, but you're like the front line and figuring out if it's safe enough to use for everyone else, right? You're basically helping everyone else. So I agreed to it. And it would have cost me $14,000-something, right, easily. But since I was covered based on the Purple Heart medal I received and I got the VA card for it for medical, it was free. The only thing I had to pay for were certain types of pills, but that was so cheap, right? Definitely, definitely worth it, right? My military service kind of paid off when it came to that because when I needed help, they offered it. Now, the VA was originally not very good for military personnel a long time ago. In fact, some cases, there are moments where it's still not good today here and there, but for myself personally, the VA is absolutely amazing. You did your time in the military, now they're going to return the favor and help you, right? As much as they possibly can, right? Within their power. And that's something else that kind of bothers me too, is that people will tell me, dude, if you want money, just tell them you are suffering from post-traumatic stress, and they'll give you money. And I told this guy, well, I don't have post-traumatic stress, and he replies back, you're not listening to what I'm saying. And I'm like, okay, at that point, I'm just like, let him talk and leave. And then in my head, I'm like, I'm not going to lie about suffering from post-traumatic stress. You know why? Because if I lie and they find out, that's my ass. And another thing is, there could be somebody else that needs it way more who actually has post-traumatic stress. And since I lied to go in it, they don't get the opportunity to get help. And it could cause a lot of problems down the road. So that's why I don't do that. If I'm actually suffering from post-traumatic stress, if it ever should occur, then yes, I'm going to get help for it. But until then, no, I'm not doing it. The only thing that honestly does happen from time to time, and I'm not afraid to admit it, is that I do get depressed every once in a while. I wake up, and sometimes I think to myself, what am I doing with my life? I'm not married. I got this strange job. I don't have a house or anything like that. It's just, what am I doing? What am I honestly doing with my life, right? And there are moments where it gets overbearing to the point where I just don't want to do anything. But then I get motivation to come back to it, right? It comes and goes. But, you know, if I really need help, obviously I'll get the help that I need. I'll go to VA and probably tell them, hey, I might need a therapist or whatever because I'm really suffering right now. But I know where I can go if things get really worse, right? And there's also friends, too, that can help you out as well. But they can only go so far because you need a professional to really help you out. And give him a little shout. I'm giving him a little shout out. But there is another podcast that's furry based called From the Muzzle. And I know the host of that show, his name is Space. Just Space, not Spacey-een, Space Bear. apparently on his podcast, he also received some help as well. And he told people that basically if you're suffering from any kind of depression or whatever, or you're not feeling that great personally or mentally or anything like that, seek help professionally because it really helps you out. So like I said, a little shout out to the other podcast. And I think this is about it. So yeah, military personnel overall, like if you ever think about going into the military, I'd say this, it's difficult. It's going to be difficult physically, mentally. You're going to be away from family. You're going to be harm's way, depending on what your job is, right? But if it's something you really want to do, do some research. But ultimately, if you do go in the military, it does help you out. Because again, I went through college, right? And that's what the military pays for, depending on if you're active duty or not, right? I was active duty. So I got the post-9/11 bill, which basically pays for your college. It pays you to go to college. Depending on how many classes you have per semester, it pays you quite a bit. So if you ever want to get a jump start in your associate's or bachelor's degree, and military is definitely going to help you out there. But again, you got to be willing to serve 4, maybe 5 years in the service. But it's really good for your name because when people find out you're a military personnel, they will treat you with so much respect. And it also helps you out because, like I said, medical reasons for VA, college, all that stuff. So there are benefits to it, but at the same time, it's going to be a tough road. So I'm not here trying to recruit you. I'm just saying, if you're ever interested, I gave you kind of a backstory on what it's like. And ultimately, it's your decision to do it. There are benefits, there are risks. But depending on what you want, it's entirely up to you. So anyway, I hope you all enjoyed the podcast for the Derg Boy podcast, by the way. My name is Rugged, or Rugged the Dragon, whatever you want to call me. Again, if you want to contact me on Twitter personal messages, Discord personal messages, all that stuff, ask me anything you want, and I will answer it in the following episodes. So please, 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 I beg you, I'm begging right now, ask me some questions, and I will answer them. So anyway, I hope everyone enjoyed the episode about my military service, and I wish you all a good day, and I'll see you next time.